Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with the cardio for those deep water championship rounds. I am Mags, and with me today, my son Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
I'm not too bad, how's yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. In kind of getting used to this new format where we're recording to instantly put it out on Shooting the Sports-ish. It's a bit tiring, but yeah, it's literally 4:10 in the morning and we've just finished watching UFC in Vegas 11, UFC Apex 13, whatever they want to call them. It was UFC Fight Night, Covington versus Woodley to be. Massive card. Quickly go through these prelims though. Started with Tyson Nam picking up the second round KO against Jerome Rivera. Andre Lewell getting the decision against Irwin Rivera. And then Randy Costa getting the first round knockout in the bantamweight against Jerry Newsom, the first round knockout of many in this show. Derek Minna got a first round sub against TJ Laramie. Jessica Rose Clark in the women's bantamweight picked up the third round knockout against Sarah Alpar. Going down to the women's flyweight, another first round finish with Mara Bueno Silva picking up the win against Mara Romero Barella. Third round sub for Damon Jackson against Mirsad Bektik in the featherweight, and then the feature prelim saw David Dvorak get the decision against Jordan Espinoza. So then we move on to the main card. Six fights on this card, three first round finishers, three taken to the judges, and we start with Kevin Holland and Darren Stewart, and this was a fight that went to the judges, and it was probably the most entertaining fight in terms of the fighters like banter between each other. First round, they looked like they were just going to go hell for leather. These actually looked, and I said to Carlos while I was watching it, it looked like a bum fight where they were just looking to knock each other out. Both ended up stunning each other like one at the same time, almost like a Rocky stun, where they were just both trying to land hammer fists all the way through, trying to just lay into each other. Once it got to the fence, it seemed like Holland had the advantage. He was able to control Stewart up against the fence a lot more. He was able to, even when Stewart reversed the position, it didn't take long for Holland to kind of get him back up against the fence. Coming out into the second round, a lot of the same stuff, except this time Holland goes down on the floor, and Stewart was punching his feet. I think I saw on Twitter someone saying it's called the Veruca attack. Stewart definitely didn't want none of Holland on the ground. I really liked watching Holland's kind of kicks though from the bottom. He was kind of trying to goad Stewart into coming down, but it didn't happen. And then Holland basically landed a couple of body kicks and a couple of knees to the face to end the round. And it seemed to me like it was a kind of anyone's fight going into the third round. And for me, Holland did well to take it. He landed a lot of heavy shots. He was able to weather the kind of storm that Stewart had in the last, and just kind of pin him against the cage. And ultimately, that was the way he won the fight for me. He was able to control Stewart a lot more against the cage. In terms of offense, they were probably fairly equal, to be fair. Both had shots that really hurt the other one. But for me, it boiled down to Kevin Holland being able to control on the fence.
Yeah, Kevin Holland came with a perfect game plan. He knew that Darren Stewart were going to be the much more powerful guy, the much stronger guy. In the first round, when they went in the clinch position, as he clearly stated out, he was strong, and they had a bit of a chuckle together, but he knew that he weren't going to overpower him. So we knew that he needed to be the volume striker rather than the power puncher. And that's exactly what in my opinion, what he did obviously tonight, he wasn't trying to knock Darren Stewart out. Like, obviously, you see him doing his last fight of his last opponent. He was looking mainly just for, if I can outstrike this guy and take him to decision, that the fight is going to be mine. And the first two rounds, he did that perfectly. Obviously, from the first round when he was getting his feet punched in and elbowed, but when he were able to get back up to his feet with the ref standing him up, he were able to do enough with his very weird striking set. He's not like your average guy. He's not a very. I'd say he's not the hardest opponent in the world, but it's just the skill set he brings is a bit weird, diverse to like read, if you would, in the first like 5 to 10 minutes. And I believe that's what Darren Stewart sort of struggled with, even though you've trained for the guy, you've had a camp for the guy. It's a bit weird actually stepping in there, taking it back to a lot of people who fight Bones when they say, like, oh, they've always got a game plan, but when they get in front of there, it's like the game plan just, for some reason, just goes out the window. And for me, Kevin Owens is one of them sort of characters, and that's why Darren Stewart, we seen him turn it on a bit more in the third, and he needed to, really. If that were a make or break for him that round, and he just didn't do enough in the round. Like you said, Kevin Owens knew that if I just keep him up against the fence here and put a bit of clinch work in, at the end of the day, I've already got round one and two in the bag. if I play this round safe, I'm going to end up winning it. And yeah, Darren Stewart, he looked a bit disappointed with the decision, but obviously, I think me and you agree that the decision was fair.
I believe it were. Like I said, if it were to go down on strikes, I think it was a much closer fight. But when you add in the way that Holland was able to control him against the fence, there's no answer for me. That tips it over into Holland's favour.
Definitely.
So then after that, we got three first round finishers in a row, starting in the women's strawweight division with Mackenzie Dern, the elite level jiu-jitsu specialist, against Randa Marcos. Started pretty well. Marcos countered the shots nicely from Mackenzie Dern, and Mackenzie like threw a crazy head kick and like went down to the mat. But Marcos straight away went for the most stupid thing she could have done, and that's following her down to the mat. When you are facing someone with the elite level skill of a ground game, you let that girl stand back up.
Such a lucky move.
She instantly went straight into a submission position where she was getting tied up for an armbar or a triangle. Marcos didn't even looked like she was trying to get out of it, and when Mackenzie Dern transitioned and flipped herself into top mount, it was over. Mackenzie knew she had plenty of time to work, so she didn't rush. There was no kind of like massive urgency with her game. She just kept Randa Marcos thinking about what she's going to do with the occasional ground and pound while slowly working away for that armbar. She locked it in beautifully, trapped Randa Marcos's arm. She trapped the head, so there was no way that that Marcos was getting out. Fair play to Marcos. She took that like a proper champ. We and Carlos were cringing at how many different angles that her elbow was getting pointed in. And I think Mackenzie Dern is probably going to be disappointed with herself of how long it took her to finally lock that armbar in. She tried it under one armpit, couldn't kind of work it, tried it under the other armpit. Randa Marcos eventually did after tap. And it's just a lesson learned for her. If a jiu-jitsu especially is on the floor, don't dive in, because they like sharks. That's what she was waiting for. And Mackenzie Dern making another massive statement.
Mackenzie Dern, what a perfect way to finish your fight, and a very lucky way after fucking up and what like she did. She ended up what she did, running, jumping.
Yeah, she went for a massive like I said, wild head kick, which just didn't work, and she ended up on the floor.
Yeah, so, like you say, Marcos, what an absolute rookie mistake that she made there. She should have instantly just went over to her, started chopping at her legs a bit, mm-hmm. before the referee ended up standing her up, because there was no point in just letting her stand up. You might as well do some damage to a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu specialist who's going to try to take you down and try to submit you. Don't jump in, and especially the sloppier way she jumps in. She jumps straight in to a triangle. That's the white belt shit. It's the proper white belt shit. And against someone like Mackenzie Dern, who is known for pulling off submissions. Now, obviously, a lot of people, I don't think Matt... some people will know this, but some people won't. But a little fun fact, women, especially in these sort of submissions with your arm bars, your knee bars, your stuff like that, it's actually harder to submit a woman than it is a man, because women are naturally more flexible than men, with the bone structure, the density, obviously the way the muscles are formed and shaped. But Mackenzie Dern, she knew straight away, instead of trying to just keep pulling down on the arm, when she finally did get the armbar, she adjusted it and put Marcus's hand basically underneath her armpit, and swung her arm underneath the elbow and started talking on it that way. She knew she was going to get enough torque then, and that's exactly what happened. She got enough torque for Marcus to go, fuck that, I can feel my arm popping.
Yeah.
I need that.
Yeah, well, I commented in a group thread that we've got on Twitter about it brought back horrific memories of when my knee was 90 degrees the wrong direction. Yeah, it was scary looking. But like I said, it's the flexibility of Marcos, and props to her for being able to put up with it for so long, because she was in that armbar for a long while.
Oh yeah, definitely. I can tell you myself, on a personal level, it does not feel nice in them sort of situations. But as well with this, it just goes to show how safe mixed martial arts has come along since 20 years ago. Because if people were to go back and watch an episode of Sports Science with Frank Mir, it goes through how much force does it take for him to break a bat or a limb, and the one of them, they use an actual dummy, physically like a sculpted to be made human, the same ligaments, same bones, muscles and that lot, everything trying to make it as similar as possible to humans as possible. And Frank Mir put a little bit of torque on the knee and the elbow part and just fucking destroyed it. So mm-hmm. it just shows how well referees today can do the job, because if there weren't no referee in there, that Marcus's arm would not be in the socket. It only takes, I think it's like 40 pound of force to start breaking and ripping your tendons and your muscles off. So yeah, congratulations to Mackenzie Dern, but we can all just take a little look at that fight and just appreciate how safe the sport has come.
Yeah, absolutely. Going into the next fight, we was treated to another first round finish. This one a little bit more exciting than the Mackenzie Dern one. Johnny Walker taking on Ryan Spann in the light heavyweight division. Johnny Walker, whenever he comes, he... like him or dislike him, the guy puts on a show, and again he put on a show today. Straight after the start of the fight, he was looking to land leg kicks and left hands. In almost instantly, they went up against the cage. Walker up against the fence. When they separated, Walker got clipped with almost like a phantom punch, which knocked him down to the canvas. Spann then knocked him down almost again straight away, rushed in for the takedown against the cage, but Johnny Walker, just the resilience on this kid is unreal. Whilst being clearly hurt from being knocked down twice, the guy avoided the takedown and started landing hammer fist after hammer fist, and basically puts Ryan Spann out, and wins the fight from being almost a second away from being knocked out. Absolutely phenomenal. There was a bit of a call from Spann's corner to say the shots were at the back of the head because there was a knee that landed, and then there were some hard elbows and punches. They weren't to the back of the head, they were to the side of the head. Johnny Walker pulled off a dramatic comeback victory, and this guy is just amazing to watch.
Yeah, well, he got so lucky in that, like you say, the phantom punch. Personally, I like to call him a dirty punch because it's the punches you don't see coming. But yeah, Johnny Walker, he were able to, I don't know if he could take a punch, or just his mental game told him that no, he's not fucking losing again. Or he's obviously training now with John Kavanagh, whatever it was, something helped him in that fight. Obviously, like you said, he got dropped, and instantly me and you thought it were over. And then within about a second, he were elbowing him and hammer-fisting him.
It were mental.
And obviously, I can agree with Ryan's coaches a bit, punches to the back of the head. Obviously, some of them were a bit sloppy, but this fight lasted only very short, so I'll cover a bit of the...
2 minutes.
Yeah, 2 minutes, exactly. So
2 minutes, 43.
I'll cover a bit of the ref sort of situation, what he was sort of looking at in this point of view. Obviously, his coaches were on about punches to the back of the head, which is totally... It's just totally agreed. Yeah, fair enough. A couple of them was to the back of the head, but when you're a referee and you're looking at two fighters in that position, you've got a fighter up against the fence, and you've got their opponent who's forcing that fighter up against the fence, and their only thing to do is either try and get double underhooks, one underhook, try and fight it off with a Kimura or whatever. The other one is getting punched or elbow to the head. Now, when you're getting someone up against the fence and you're trying for a double or a single leg, usually your head is on either side of that person's body. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of fighters will tend to put their head down and bury it into their opponent's chest at that point, but they'll also tend to start turning their head away so they can't get it in the side of the face. But what the referee has got to think of then is, at the end of the day, this is still a fight. That's a technique fighters use. So it's like, yo, ref, he's hitting me in the head here, but it's like, yeah, but mate, you're turning into that, so he's hitting you in the back of the head. So that's what a lot of people misunderstand about in today. It's like, yeah, fair enough, it was a couple of them was to the back of the head, but most majority of them, Ryan wasn't helping himself by turning his head into it. So that's why you didn't see a lot of the ref saying, like, don't watch what you're doing. The ref knew exactly what Ryan were doing. Mm-hmm. Ryan knew exactly what he were doing. He knew, yeah, fuck, I'm getting punched inside the head here, I'm gonna end up getting knocked out. I'm going to turn my head a bit, hopefully that works for me. And it didn't. He should have let go and recalculated, because he were winning that fight. And if he did let go and recalculate, one or two more cracks, he could have put fucking Johnny Walker back down on the floor, because that's exactly what he did before, trying to push him up against the fence. So yeah, he got a couple of cracks, but what the ref was seeing, Ryan was putting himself in that situation more than Johnny Walker was actually doing anything rather illegal.
Yep. So then after that, went into another first round finish, and it's just the best one of the night. It's quite as simple and clear as that. Kamzat Chimaev taking on Gerald Mershaw in the middleweight division. Now, the fight lasted 17 seconds, so we're obviously going to talk more than the fight lasted. But this is a guy who has literally come from nowhere in terms of the UFC. This is his third fight in 66 days. He broke Cain Velasquez's long-standing record for the amount of strikes thrown against the amount of strikes he's absorbed. Cain was like 141 and 2 in two fights, and Chimaev was like 192 in two. So this guy's just an absolute animal. Really taking a step up in quality against Gerald Mershaw, but to be fair, you wouldn't even think it was a step up in quality, because the fight starts, Chimaev basically walks Gerald Mershaw down, gets him to back up towards the cage, throws one punch, starches Mershaw. Mershaw is clean out of that one punch. He follows up with a couple more, but they were irrelevant. The first punch is the one what knocked him out. 17 seconds in, Chimaev has now gone 195 punches to strike to two over three fights. The guy just smashing UFC records left, right, and centre. The dude's already booked for his next fight against Damien Maia. I fear for Maia's life. This guy's going to kill him. The only way you're going to see Chimaev lose is if you run a five-fight gauntlet and just have him fight, just that. Just people taking him on straight after losing the fight. What a performance.
Put money on it now, he still beats four of them.
What a performance, though. Absolutely amazing.
Definitely. Right, before I even speak about him, I want to say about Gerald, what a guy. Even though it didn't go his way, and it really did not go his way tonight, I don't want to see anyone basically say, you were just another canny fought. Now, no, it wasn't. Even his last two opponents in the UFC haven't been cans. His last two opponents have been absolute killers. Gerald was just another one of them. Unfortunately, but fortunately for Chimaev, he's just looking that good. He's just looking like one of these fighters who is that good. And like I said to you when they were fight, I hope he doesn't get beat, because it's been a long time since we've got a hype train like this. My personal opinion, I fucking love seeing casuals getting pissed off because no one can beat him. He's like, he's a top guy. Why would you want to see him getting beat? But, like I said, Chimaev, who is going to beat him? He's on a fucking roll, man. He's, like you say, 194-2 in his last three fights.
195 strikes to two, yeah.
Exactly. It's 66 days he's been in the UFC and he's got three victories. He's already scheduled to fight Damien Maia in about, a week or two or something. I think it's tomorrow, I think.
might as well be.
Exactly, like you said, he might as well just fucking step up and take Cerrone's place or fucking somebody else's place.
To be fair, I bet Cerrone wished he did.
Chimaev would have. That's how much of a gangster he is.
He'd have even cut the weight. He'd have even been able to cut that extra like 15
grand. Just go for a quick piss and he'd be fucking happy to go. Well, it just goes to show this is what Dana's looking for. People can't complain. I know in the fight, Gerald, like I said to you, the guy needs to calm down. I think that's what pissed him off a bit. I think that's what ruined the fight for him is, like I said to you when they were walking about the octagon, I said to you, didn't he? He looked pissed off, he looks too pissed off. He needs to calm down a bit. And I think in his head, he just wanted to hurt Chimaev just because of the fact is that UFC is scheduled in for another fight down the line. How can you blame your opponent for getting scheduled in for another? It's not like he's looking past you. He's physically said he's not looking past you. He's just looking ahead of you after he beats you. So it's that sort of stuff is just mind games. And as a fighter, especially in this day and age when you've got people who can just talk and talk and talk, it's not good to have sort of a weak mindset like that if you get what I'm saying. So tough tennis to be in. Fucking get back on your high horse and just keep working at it. But I said, Chimaev, no one's going to stop him. Yeah. No one's going to stop him. I'll put money on it now. No one's going to stop him. He will be, if I think, middleweight. He will fight Paulo Costa or Adesanya in the next year. Guarantee it.
If he goes the way he's running, he'll be fighting him by Christmas.
He'll have two more fights by the end of the year. He'll have a fight scheduled after the Maia fight before he even fights Maia. That's the sort of guy this is. That's the sort of guy this guy's looking like, and that's the sort of guy Dana wants. At the end of this, what most fighters, like I'm a fighter now, like he's shown me a little bit of inspiration. He's shown me what, at the end of the day, not everybody else, what I need to do. Like, this is what a true champion is made of, and this is coming from a fighter as a fan of the sport. That's a champion right there. Someone who doesn't give up. Someone who keeps on succeeding. Someone who's now got a 9-0 record when he did have an 8-0 and he believed he was that good to go out there and beat Gerald and look exactly what he did. He didn't even go out there and choke him out. One punch is all it took him for him to take him up that ladder to the next step of his UFC career, to that one step closer to that gold.
The fight against Maia will be a good testing ground for him. Maia's obviously now a huge gatekeeper in that division. So let's see where he goes in a month or so. Like I said, we could be looking at a very soon a title contender. But let's go into the co-main event, the one what we tried to sub him in for Cerrone. And to be fair, I think at least in that first round, Cerrone would have probably wanted him to sub him. He he just did not look like the fighter that we know Cerrone to be. This is a guy who's coming, who was at the elite level in multiple divisions. He was getting title shots in multiple divisions, and he's now riding. He was riding a 4-5 loss streak, which is it's the last time we heard of something like that was Dan Hardy. And yeah, it just seems like the wheels have fallen off for Cowboy Cerrone. I said to Carlos while we were watching the fight, there's some fighters who you can see slowly kind of like the skills degrade and they slowly make their way down the card and down the rankings, and then there's some people who are elite level and then they just drop off, and the beginning of this fight did feel like the Cerrone had dropped off a cliff. Nico Price just dominated for the first 2-3 minutes of this fight. Cerrone looked like he had no power, he looked like he had no energy. Price was just absolutely dominated, and what actually woke Cerrone up was kind of getting poked in the eye a couple of times. Nico Price ended up getting a point deducted because he was warned by the referee Jason Herzog a couple of times. He landed some good shots to Cerrone's liver, and then the jab to the face of Cerrone cut his eye, and that, like I said, it kind of did wake Cerrone up, and he started attacking more, throwing more kicks and more punches. Going into out of that first round, it should have been a Nico Price easy round, but because of the point deduction, obviously it was a 9-9 round, which kind of gives the impetus to Donald Cerrone. Going into the second round, I felt that Nico Price just dominated a lot of this fight. He was much busier than Cerrone, but Cerrone did wake up. A lot of good combinations from Price, where Cerrone's shots were like ones, maybe one twos a push. Price was landing a lot more more mixed up combinations, throwing more body kicks, throwing more 1-2 punches. Going into the third round, again, Cerrone kind of did wake up. He got the takedown, didn't really do a lot with it, and they quickly got back to the feet. Then there was a bit of a double eye poke, again, kind of like the Rise Band Johnny Walker, where they both like cracked each other, both kind of take each other out, thinking they're bloody Rocky, yeah? Then Cerrone then got another takedown, and Price was sprawled down on all fours, and Cerrone was really trying to work to get the finish. The events had got back onto the feet, and Cerrone was throwing more body shots. You could tell both guys were absolutely worn out in this third round, and they were just, it was literally just going hell for leather for the last 30 seconds. Price went for a takedown, got stuffed, and yeah, it ended up being a very interesting majority draw. One of the judges gave the fight to Cerrone 29-27, which I thought were interesting. I didn't think he particularly won any of the rounds. I think that the draw probably was the fairest result, because I had to give Price the second, I had to give Cerrone the third for the takedowns and the control, and obviously the first should have been Price's, but Price muffed it up for himself. So for a judge to give basically two rounds to Cerrone, and the only way that works out is if he give Cerrone the first round and then dock the point, so basically end up being a 10-8 round to Cerrone. Either way, it was a majority draw. I can see that fight going running back, and I think it's a bit of a get out of jail card for Cerrone, because five loss streak it's hard to come back from. But yeah, it's a draw.
Yeah, definitely. Let's say a couple of things. The two common problems that are always popping up with the UFC is the bad judging and the gloves. They need to look at the judges, and they need to change the pissing judging, and stop having people who fucking make sandwiches on a weekend and watch football on a Monday. So they need to change people who actually watch fighting, who love the sport, who've got a passion to not make sure not only it's fair, but to make sure it's safe at the same time. But the gloves, the UFC are, I don't know why they don't want to look at Trevor Whitman's, like, what he's involved in.
Right.
He's like,
so I had a look at this ONX, and the actual MMA gloves for in Octagon Combat are not ready. They're still in like the his testing phase.
Yeah, but he's got near enough the final product that is still better than the UFC.
All the training gloves are available, but the actual fight gloves they're not available. You can sign up to get information once it releases them, but yeah, they're not out for retail sale yet.
Ah, fair enough. Well,
but yeah, I agree with you. I think the UFC gloves are a massive, massive problem.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when you've got two fighters like these, man, and these two are just dog fighters. A cowboy on a good day, a Nico on a good day, will go in there and always give you what you pay for, always give you a performance. But like you said, Cowboy is slowly seeming like one of them where he's slowly starting to drop off, but you're not noticing it until it's too late. But like I said to you, he's always been one of these who's always said he's not never going to give up until he's told that he has to. Mm-hmm. Which, to be honest with you, in my opinion, is never the best way. But he's old school. He's been doing it longer than me, so I'm no position to tell him otherwise. And especially with Nico Price. But Nico Price had so much respect for Cerrone. That's what I loved more about this fight, more than all. He knew Cerrone, but he'd given the respect. It's not like he came in like a young guy who came with a fucking cocky attitude thinking he was going to beat him up because he was an old man. Is it weren't Rodriguez, Henderson, or something like that? Fuck knows. Jimmy Rivera? Fuck that.
It weren't Jimmy Rivera.
He's fucking
old. Were it not Hernandez?
Hernandez, that were it. Hernandez, until he got kicked in chin. But yeah, Nico didn't give him anything like that. Just gave him nothing but respect.
Yeah.
I think that were it. He just gave him exactly what he paid for. Cerrone said he were a good father in the press conference, which obviously me now as a father and you as a father is a big thing to get a compliment of someone who you respect anyway, and then to turn around in the middle of a press conference when you'd expect him to say something about your fighting, to turn around and say, no, lad, I want to fight the guy just because he's a good father. Mm-hmm. That's something nice to say. So this fight went exactly how I expected it to go, bar from the airport. Cerrone's always been one of them slow stars. He's always been, seems to be one of them who he needs a punching chops to get that cowboy fired up. But Nico's, he wants that bell rings, that he just goes, the pair of them. Like I said, the first round, if it weren't for the point deduction, that easily would have went to Nico Price. Like you said, he were cleaner with the combos, he were cleaner with the volume strikes. Cerrone weren't doing that much. Like I said, the people can say about the head movement, but he didn't really move his head in the first place. He's always been able to take a crack, but especially off a guy like Nico who can give you a solid crack, that's a dangerous way to play it, because yeah, you might be able to take one of them, but try to take 10 of them and still spelling your own name. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a bit difficult. So yeah, it's a fair decision, no one can complain. Like when it said obviously a draw, I didn't feel like I were robbed in a way. I thought, no, what, that's fair enough. They might run it back, they might not. Either way, I'm happy at the result. I'm happy with how the fight went. I think Nico Price were a little bit too happy that he got a draw. Donald Cerrone were looking at him like, the fuck are you happy about? But I think that was more like, I've just gone 3 rounds with Cerrone and not got my fucking ass whooped.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, congratulations to both of them. At least none of them go home with an L, but none of them go home with a W either. So.
Yeah. Then let's go into this main event. Colby Covington, everybody knows that we are not huge fans of his attitude, but we are huge fans of him as a fighter. We know that he always brings it, and he's always his cardio is just absolutely phenomenal. He's a very rounded fighter. I give him props for that. I just don't like the way he handles himself.
The guy's a dickhead, but yeah. He can fight. Dick and fart.
And he took Tyron Woodley, the former welterweight champion, to school today. It's as simple and clear as that. There's no other way of describing this fight. From the first minute, this was the Colby Covington show. He absolutely dominated every single round. Even the first round, which was quite quiet compared to the others, it was Covington was better in the middle of the octagon with the standing and banging. He was better when he was pressing Woodley up against the fence. Woodley just did not seem like he wanted to be in this fight. Now, if you go back to the press conference, obviously he did answer a lot of the questions. He was linking them all to Black Lives Matter. Which I understand his point. He's trying to kind of like shed light on it, but to me it also kind of showed that he wasn't interested in this fight. And coming into the octagon and the fight, it was quite clear. So getting into that second round, again it was pretty much all Covington. Woodley landed a couple of shots here and there, but Covington's output was just absolutely phenomenal. And then in the second round, we started to see where Woodley was not interested in the fight. He complained in the second round of getting a low blow, which didn't happen. Covington did a lot of the control against the cage. Into the third round, there was an airport. Woodley asked for the doctor to come and check him out. We thought that fight was going to probably end there if he said the words he couldn't see. He didn't, which kind of shocked me, because I thought that was his get out of this fight clause. Covington again just dominated that third round. Got him up against the cage, was scoring with knees and elbows and punches. He wasn't particularly trying to damage Woodley. It was just scoring points, which is fair play to him. In the fourth round, he turned up that pressure, though. So in the fourth round, he really did turn up the pressure, though. He was landing a lot more, got more ground and pound. He ended up cutting Woodley over his eye, and the blood was just pissing into his face. It was a massively, massively dominant round. And then going into the fifth, we knew that, well, even Woodley's team said, look, you are losing this fight. You need to go out and finish it. Covington got the takedown and he just absolutely dominated. He lifted Woodley up, slammed him to the mat. Woodley went for a kind of guillotine, but once Covington got his arm free and was able to put his elbow to the floor, Woodley screamed about his rib hurting. Now, we watched the fight, we then watched the replay, and there's no way that Colby puts any kind of real pressure on that rib. So I'm calling now. I think he faked it. I honestly think he faked that injury. The shots that Colby was landing, first of all, weren't really in the ribs. They were more lower down into like the liver area, and they were taps. They were just like the kind of taps that you just do to like basically confuse your opponent. No way I think Woodley had had enough, and he knew he was not going to get the win, and just faked a rib injury. I'll call him now. I think he faked it. Simple as that. Colby picks up a victory. He's got to be facing Usman next, surely.
I believe so. Especially after a performance like that. Wild man, Woodley. He hasn't won a fight since what, 2017?
There was a stat that I saw just as we were coming in to record. He's lost the last 15 rounds on the judges' scorecard.
He's lost the last three fights. That's obviously fucking this one now. Gilbert Burns and then fucking Usman. And let's put it this way, he didn't have the best run as champion, because it's not like he made best pals with Uncle Dana. So, a guy's falling out of love with the sport, if you get what I did there. But, he's 38. He's he's going to get hurt if he carries on. He's just took some serious elbows off a guy who everyone complains about and wants to see him lose. I want to see him lose, but Colby Covington is a fucking fighter and a dangerous guy. And when he comes to fight, he comes to fight. He doesn't come to tickle you, he comes to fight. And it's... See, well, like you said, I'm going to agree with you. I've never seen that happen to anybody ever in the gym, on telly. I've never seen anybody get an injury from going for a guillotine attempt.
But if his rib was so injured, I get it. But it wasn't injured when he was attempting the guillotine. Oh. He was cranking on that neck, absolutely cranking on it, and you're absolutely fine. The minute that Colby's arm got free and he was able to release that pressure, that's when Woodley was starting to scream about his ribs. I honestly do think that was him knowing, yeah, that was my last chance at winning this fight. Let's end it now. I don't want to. Like get whipped, because he was going to get whipped. Colby's head was out. He was just going to lay.
Colby were already doing it anyway. The one thing about Woodley now is people know how to beat him. He's basically the Damian Maia. A lot of people know how to beat him. Is Tyron Woodley? He goes up against the fence. When he's up against the fence, he either don't want you to take down, or he's going to shoot in, or he's going to try and pull you in to try and get that massive rat off. Now, if you stay away from all that, he's got one or two of the weapons, maybe that jab, maybe that Superman punch we've seen, but other than that, he hasn't got much, much more. He hasn't got that many high kicks. He might kick you a couple of times, like a couple of times to the body, but he's got tree trunk legs, so it takes him a lot of energy to get his muscly legs up there, so he doesn't do that a lot. That's why he's a wrestler, a lot more forced down. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't beat Usman, he doesn't beat Corbett. And if he doesn't beat these guys, why is he still doing it at 38? He has got children, he's got family, he's still got a career after this. What's the point in sticking about and just basically hurting yourself? Because he's dreamed not to be one of these fighters who's just doing it for a paycheck. He's always said from day one, he wants to be the champion. If he's not the champion, then there's no point in doing it. Mm-hmm. So what's the point in doing it? Because he's not going to be champion.
He's not championship level. It's as simple as that anymore.
He's dropped off so much in the last 3 years. His last three fights have clearly shown that. He got out-wrestled by Usman, who, in that fight, people were saying, oh, Woodley were injured. No, he wasn't. Woodley was 100%. It was actually Usman that was injured. He got out-wrestled and battered off Gilbert Burns. And then now he's just been out-wrestled and battered off Corbin. The guy needs to... At the end of the day, Dean Fing, Dean, his head coach, he didn't even have much to say to him. It's like, when they were stopped, it's like you could tell, you could see it in Dean's eyes, like, fuck do I say here? Literally, the only thing he had to him were, you want to beat this guy, don't you? The will to win is the only thing you need to...
He didn't show that will in 23 and a half minutes of fighting.
I believe he gave up.
Yeah.
And that there's no other... Bar from... Because he's... Like I'm saying, he couldn't take Covington down properly. The only defence for that was to put his arse up against the cage, and Colby still managed to take him down a couple of times. So that game plan was slowly getting broken down by him.
But even when he did that, though, if that's the case and your game plan is to be basically clinching against the fence, throw some shots. Some work. He did nothing.
He didn't do anything. And then look at it, in the third or fourth round, he ended up getting, because he didn't do nothing, he ended up getting tucked down, 114-2 or something like that.
That was the fourth round. He absolutely dominated. It was 114-2.
Yeah, and then obviously the fifth round, it was like, right, I'm getting battered here. What's my excuse, basically?
I think we've seen maybe the end of Tyron Woodley, at least in the UFC. I can't see Dana wanting to give him another fight after this.
Well, we've seen it. It's not like Dana's had the best track record of keeping fighters who's not being pally-pally with him, especially when they've gone off on runs like this. He's always... That's one... that's one reason he's always got rid of people. Right, you've had beef with me. What, you're doing shit, right? Bye bye, you cut. Yeah. They've just cut, look, just cut John Dodson in the water about yesterday. So, and look at how much he's. He, well, obviously, he worked championship material for him because he never held the belt, but he still was an exciting fighter. He dropped off a bit. He worked world's number one. He's got told by bar, so it happens, yeah, especially in today, with no pandemic going on.
Yeah, there's very little loyalty within the UFC at the best of times. When you're not in the good books of Dana, that the only way you stay in a job is by keep winning. And unfortunately, Tyron is now three lost streak.
It's pushing the age of 39. Personally, I don't think he's going to get his title back. And the talent and the way the UFC and mixed martial arts is moving so fast, it's a ride or die situation. And I think in this situation, it is going to be a die for Tyron Woodley. And I think he just needs to be a bit more clever at his next decisions, whether it is his family speaks to him or his coaches, whether he's actually serious about still continuing fighting, because it's a dangerous thing if your mind's not in there. If your body's in there just to fight, well done, you're the next Arona. But if your mind's not in there, there's no fucking point.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's look forward to next week's show, back on Fight Island. And it's a dual title. It's UFC 253. There's five fights so far on the main card. Three of them not exactly amazing fights. So Sajara Eubanks is making, I think, a third fight in about 70 days, which is absolutely brilliant for her. Yeah, pretty much. Kara France is facing Brandon Rovell, but this card's built around the two title matches of Dominic Reyes taking on Jan Blachowicz and Israel Adesanya versus Paulo Costa. Someone's O has to go. A lot of hate and a lot of animosity in this match. It's going to be interesting, though. The first light heavyweight champion cannot be Cormier or Bones in what, about 10 years?
Yeah, last decade. Madness. It's been mental for that, but I'm just so excited for that main event. I'm fucking shaking.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
Definitely, especially with Costa being such a huge fucking animal, and with Adesanya being just the all round spectacular striker, like you said. Someone's always got to go.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely check in with us next week for that. Remember now, you can also find us not only on Visionaries Global Media and thechairshot.com, but now we're also on Shooting the Sports-ish. This will be going out as a video on YouTube as well as on their channel. Yeah. So definitely get subscribed and get involved. You can follow me on Twitter at DAJ Kirby. Follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos. Thank you all for listening, and that is the end.
Adios, amigos.
Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.